Hello, and welcome to your GCSE English Language Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor today, and we're diving deep into Component 2, Nonfiction and Transactional Writing. Whether your exam is tomorrow or a few weeks away, this episode is going to give you everything you need to walk in, feeling confident and prepared. So let's set the scene. Component 2 is all about real-world reading and writing. You'll be reading nonfiction texts, things like newspaper articles, travel writing, autobiography, and opinion pieces. And you'll also be producing your own nonfiction writing for a specific purpose and audience. This is the paper where your ability to analyze how writers communicate ideas and your own ability to communicate effectively are both put to the test. Let's start with the reading side of things because this is where a lot of marks are available. The first skill examiners are looking for is your ability to identify and interpret information. Now, this sounds simple, but there's a crucial distinction you need to understand. Explicit information is stated directly in the text. It's right there on the surface. Implicit information is suggested or implied. You have to read between the lines. When a question asks you to identify something, it usually wants explicit details. When it asks you to infer or interpret, that's your cue to dig deeper. A really common mistake candidates make is writing too much for identification questions. If a question is worth 2 or 4 marks and asks you to list or identify, keep your answers brief and focused. Don't write paragraphs, just find the information and state it clearly. Now let's move on to the big one, analyzing language. This is where the majority of marks are concentrated in the reading section, and it's the skill that separates the good answers from the outstanding ones. When you're asked how a writer uses language, the examiner wants you to do 3 things. First, name the technique. Second, quote it, and keep your quotation short and embedded within your sentence. Third, and most importantly, explain the effect on the reader. This is where most candidates fall short. They spot the technique, they quote it, and then they stop. But the marks are in the analysis, the so what moment. Let me give you an example. Imagine a text describes a city as a concrete jungle suffocating in gray. A weaker answer might say, the writer uses a metaphor. A stronger answer would say, the writer uses the metaphor concrete jungle to suggest the city is wild and overwhelming, stripping away human warmth and replacing it with something cold and impersonal. This creates a sense of unease in the reader, making them feel the narrator's alienation. Do you see the difference? The second answer explains what the technique does to the reader's emotions and understanding. The key language features you need to have at your fingertips are metaphor, simile, personification, alliteration, sibilance, juxtaposition, hyperbole, rhetorical questions, emotive language, and repetition. For each one, you need to know not just what it is, but what effect it typically creates. Let's quickly run through a few. A metaphor directly compares 2 things without using like or as. It creates a vivid, immediate image. A simile does the same, but uses like or as. It can feel slightly more tentative, as if the writer is reaching for the comparison. Personification gives human qualities to non-human things. It often creates empathy or makes abstract ideas feel more immediate. Alliteration, the repetition of consonant sounds, creates rhythm and can make a phrase more memorable or more forceful. Sibilance, the repetition of soft S sounds, can create a sense of calm or alternatively something sinister and unsettling. Juxtaposition places 2 contrasting ideas side by side to highlight the difference between them. Now, here's a really important point about language analysis. Avoid what examiners call feature spotting. That's when a candidate just lists techniques without explaining their effects. You might write, the writer uses alliteration, metaphor, and personification. That earns you very few marks because you haven't shown any understanding of why the writer made those choices. Always ask yourself, what is the writer trying to make the reader feel, think, or believe? And how does this specific technique achieve that? Moving on to structure. Structural analysis is slightly different from language analysis, and candidates often find it trickier. Structure is about how the text is organized, how it begins, how it develops, and how it ends. Key structural features to look for include the opening. How does the writer grab the reader's attention? Does it start in the middle of the action with a question, with a shocking statement? Then look at shifts in focus. Does the text move from one place, time, or idea to another? How does the writer signal these shifts? Look at sentence length variation. Short sentences create pace, tension, and emphasis. Long, complex sentences can build atmosphere or convey a sense of overwhelming detail. Look at paragraph structure. Is there a cyclical structure where the ending mirrors the beginning? Are there one-sentence paragraphs for dramatic effect? Is there a flashback or a moment of foreshadowing? When you write about structure, always link it back to meaning and effect. Don't just say, the writer uses short sentences. Say the writer uses short, punchy sentences at this point to create a sense of urgency, mirroring the panic the narrator is experiencing. Let's talk about the evaluation question, which typically carries a significant number of marks. This question asks you to form and express a personal opinion about how effectively a writer achieves something. The key word here is evaluate. You need to make a judgment. A strong evaluation response does the following. It states a clear viewpoint. To a large extent, the writer successfully conveys a sense of danger. Then it supports that viewpoint with specific evidence and analysis. Then, and this is what lifts a response to the top level, it considers a counterargument or a qualification. However, at times the writer's use of hyperbole risks undermining the genuine threat, making it feel exaggerated rather than real. This balanced critical approach is exactly what examiners are looking for. Now let's look at comparison questions. These ask you to compare how two writers present similar ideas or themes. The most important thing here is to actually compare. Don't just write about one text and then the other in separate blocks. Use comparative connectives throughout. Whereas, in contrast, similarly, both writers, unlike, point to specific similarities and differences in both what the writers say and how they say it. A useful framework is identify the viewpoint in text A, identify the viewpoint in text B, compare the methods used, and evaluate which is more effective or how they differ in impact. Right, let's switch to the writing side of the paper because this is equally important and often where students can really boost their marks. Transactional writing means writing for a real-world purpose, to persuade, argue, advise, inform, or explain. The forms you might be asked to write in include a formal letter, a newspaper or magazine article, a speech, a leaflet, a report, or a review. The absolute first thing you must do when you see a writing task is identify three things: the form, the purpose, and the audience. These three elements should shape every single decision you make in your writing. The form tells you the conventions you need to follow. A letter needs an address, a greeting, and a sign-off. A speech needs direct address to the audience. An article needs a headline and paragraphs. The purpose tells you the tone. Persuasive writing uses rhetorical devices and emotive language. Informative writing uses facts, statistics, and clear explanation. The audience tells you the register, formal for adults or professionals, more accessible for younger readers. A memory hook that will serve you brilliantly for persuasive writing is a forest. That stands for alliteration, facts, opinions, rhetorical questions, emotive language, statistics, and three, as in the rule of three. These are your persuasive toolkit. You don't need to use all of them, but weaving several of these techniques into your writing will demonstrate the kind of conscious craft that examiners reward. Let me say a word about planning because it is genuinely one of the most important things you can do. Spend 5 minutes planning before you write. Sketch out your opening, your main points, and your ending. Think about your register and tone. Think about one or two ambitious vocabulary choices you want to include. A planned piece of writing is almost always more coherent, more structured, and more effective than an unplanned one. And examiners can tell the difference. Your opening is crucial. The first sentence of your writing should grab the reader immediately. You could open with a rhetorical question, a shocking statistic, a bold statement, a vivid description, or an anecdote. Whatever you choose, make it purposeful and engaging. Your ending is equally important and often neglected. A strong ending might return to an idea from your opening. This is called a cyclical structure, and it gives your writing a satisfying sense of completeness. Or it might end with a call to action, a final rhetorical flourish, or a thought-provoking question that lingers in the reader's mind. Throughout your writing, vary your sentence structures. Use a mix of short, punchy sentences for impact and longer, more complex sentences to develop ideas. Use ambitious punctuation, semicolons to link closely related ideas, colons to introduce or explain, dashes for parenthetical asides, and parenthetical commas to add information within a sentence. These punctuation choices signal to the examiner that you have a sophisticated command of language. And finally, on the writing side, proofread. Always leave 2 or 3 minutes at the end to check your work. Look for spelling errors, missing punctuation, and grammatical mistakes. The marks available for spelling, punctuation, and grammar, often called SPAG, can make a real difference to your final grade, and they're entirely within your control. Now let's talk exam technique, because knowing the content is only half the battle. How you approach the paper on the day makes an enormous difference. First, timing. This is a timed exam, and time management is critical. As a general rule, spend roughly 1 minute per mark on reading questions. So a 4-mark question should take about 4 to 5 minutes. An 8-mark question should take around 8 to 10 minutes. For writing tasks, which typically carry 24 marks or more, you should spend at least 40 to 45 minutes, including 5 minutes planning and a couple of minutes proofreading at the end. Second, always read the question before you read the text. This sounds counterintuitive, but if you know what you're looking for, you'll read the text much more efficiently and notice the relevant details straight away. Third, annotate the text as you read. Underline key quotations, circle language features, put a star next to structural moments. This active engagement with the text means you're already doing the analytical work before you've written a single word of your answer. Let me now share the most common mistakes I see candidates make so you can actively avoid them. Mistake number one, feature spotting. I've mentioned this already, but it's worth repeating because it is the single most common way candidates lose marks. Naming a technique without explaining its effect earns minimal credit. Always analyze the effect. Mistake number two, using long block quotations. Examiners want to see that you can select the most relevant, precise evidence. Embedding a short, well-chosen quotation within your own sentence is far more impressive than copying out 3 lines of text. A good quotation is usually no more than a few words. Mistake number three, retelling the text. In reading questions, some candidates summarize what happens in the text rather than analyzing how the writer achieves effects. The question is always about the writer's craft, the how and the why, not the what. Mistake number four, writing without planning. Unplanned writing tends to be repetitive, unfocused, and structurally weak. Even a brief 5-point plan makes a huge difference. Mistake number five, ignoring the form in writing tasks. If you're asked to write a speech and you don't directly address the audience, use rhetorical devices, or include any speech conventions, you'll lose marks for not matching the form to the purpose. Mistake number six, neglecting SPAG. Spelling, punctuation, and grammar marks are available in writing tasks, and they're free marks if you take the time to proofread. Don't throw them away. Now, a quick word on command words, because understanding what each command word is asking you to do is absolutely fundamental. Identify or list means find and state specific information. Brief answers are fine here. Don't overwrite. How does the writer use language means name the technique, quote it, and explain the effect on the reader. This is a language analysis question. How does the writer use structure means focus on how the text is organized, openings, shifts, sentence length, paragraph patterns, and link these to meaning and effect. Evaluate means form a judgment and support it with evidence. Use phrases like, to a large extent, the writer is particularly effective when, and however one could argue. Compare means identify similarities and differences between two texts in terms of both content and method. Use comparative language throughout. Write a letter / article / speech means match the form conventions, sustain the appropriate register, and deploy persuasive or informative techniques throughout. Right, it's time for our quick-fire recall quiz. I'm going to ask you 5 questions. Pause the podcast after each one and try to answer before I give you the answer. Ready? Question one, what does A4 stand for? Pause now. The answer is alliteration, facts, opinions, rhetorical questions, emotive language, statistics. 3, the rule of 3. Question 2. What are the 4 steps of the Peel framework for language analysis? Pause now. The answer is point, name the technique, evidence, embed a short quotation, analysis, explain the effect on the reader, link, connect back to the question, focus. Question 3, what is the difference between explicit and implicit information? Pause now. Explicit information is stated directly in the text. Implicit information is suggested or implied. You have to infer it from what the writer says. Question 4, name 3 structural features you could comment on in a reading question. Pause now. Any 3 of the following would be excellent. The opening, shifts in focus, sentence length, variation, paragraph structure, cyclical structure, flashback, foreshadowing, one-sentence paragraphs for emphasis. Question 5, what 3 things must you identify before starting a transactional writing task? Pause now. The form, such as letter, article, or speech, the purpose, such as persuade, inform, or advise, and the audience, who you are writing for. How did you do? If you got all 5, brilliant, you've clearly been paying attention. If you missed a few, go back and reread those sections of your revision guide. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of the key things to remember. For reading, always analyze the effect of language and structure, not just identify features. Embed short, precise quotations. For evaluation questions, make a clear judgment and consider counterarguments. For comparison questions, compare throughout. Don't just write about each text separately. For writing, always identify form, purpose, and audience before you begin. Plan your writing before you draft it. Use a forest for persuasive techniques. Vary your sentence structures and use ambitious punctuation. And always proofread. For timing, roughly 1 minute per mark for writing questions, 45 minutes minimum for extended writing tasks. Read the question before the text, annotate as you read. And the golden rule that applies to everything, show the examiner your thinking. Don't just tell them what, tell them how and why. That's what earns the marks at the top levels. You've got this. Keep practicing with real nonfiction texts. Keep writing in different forms and keep asking yourself, what is the writer trying to achieve and how are they achieving it? Good luck in your exam. I'm rooting for you. Until next time, keep reading, keep writing, and keep thinking critically.